Colonel Southby, tell your reel three.
So, the cap cover from Hermes only had 10 to 15 minutes. And actually, coupled with that, which has nothing to do with anybody, whilst they were overhead at one stage, although I never saw them, they were diverted to chase some Mirage, and at the same time, four Skyhawks came in underneath, because the Hermes cap were always stationed at high level, whereas Invincible's cap were always stationed at low level for reasons I never quite understood. But it was a very funny time to go to take the aircraft carrier further east. It wasn't helped in defence of the Admiral, because he wouldn't have known this, that as he assumed that the aircraft could perhaps have refuelled at the emergency strip we'd laid at Port San Carlos. But actually that morning, at 10 o'clock that morning, the strip had been made unserviceable by a GR3 Harrier ground attack aircraft crashing on takeoff. So Royal Hermes's aircraft couldn't refuel there, so they really did only have 10 minutes overhead. And on that same subject, people have always said the Harriers were brilliant and kept the enemy at bay and so on, and I'm sure they did, and I'm very pro. But to claim that we had air parity or air superiority is absolute rubbish, because I personally saw over 200 aircraft, enemy aircraft, in that first week, and I did not see one British aircraft over my position. Now, that's not air parity. That's air supremacy on the part of the enemy. And in the following week, I saw about another 100 aircraft, enemy aircraft, and I saw one Harrier on deck refueling. That is not own forces air supremacy or air superiority. That's still enemy air superiority. And I don't give a damn who argues about whether the aircraft should have been kept safe further at sea. There's a balance between keeping them safe at sea and doing the job that they're there to do. By keeping them safe at sea, it meant the land forces were less safe. Well, I'm sorry, but I, being a member of the land forces or amphibious forces, regard that as a pretty poor return for our money. And the carriers were pretty well defended by all sorts of Type 42 frigates and their own aircraft. And it had taken more than one Exocet to sink them. And anyway, I think at that stage the enemy didn't have any Exocet or any method of launching them. So I'm sorry, I still believe it was a poor tactics on the part of the Admiral and his carriers. But I know it's not always popular to say that. But there we are. And that really was almost the end of my bit. After that, I came back, well, after the Galahad incident, I came back to Fairless, as we all did. And I did some more work, some little bits and pieces, and then went off by coincidence on the night of the victory, but I didn't know it was going to be the night of the victory, with the SBS to... and by coincidence on the night of the victory, I went off with the SBS in Pict, which is a trawler, to do some work on Carcass and Pebble Island and Saunders Island, I think. No. Anyway, the islands on the north where the SBS were watching. And we came back having done that, and then that was victory that day, I think. There was no great sense of elation. I mean, it was all sort of quite obviously coming. I think I had a glass of port or two in my cabin, but then I always had glasses of port in my cabin, so there was no great sort of change. And then I was sent off for the SBS, rather at my insistence and their insistence, and the Commodore took no persuading, to take the surrender of Pebble Island, which was fascinating. And I did that with OCSBS, the SBS ops officer. And I stayed there after the surrender.
Why was that so fascinating?
Because I knew the settlement manager very well, and it was rather fun to see him and take the surrender of somewhere, just to be in on the act in some small way. And then I went round. I joined up with HMS Avenger. I went round the Outer Islands. Now we were still obviously on a war footing, looking for downed aircraft or dead pilots, enemy observation posts, and calling in settlements which hadn't seen any friendly forces. And really, getting back to almost my sort of life before the war, when I'd been patrolling around the islands in the little steamer we had, And we were relaxed in HMS Avenger with Admiral, who wasn't Admiral then, of course, with Captain Hugo White, who I'd been at school with. A tremendous occasion, and really a most relaxed week at the end of the war. And I was really quite glad not to get into Stanley immediately, because I knew it was in a hell of a mess. It was going to be full of people, and I wanted to see my civilian friends when there was a slightly calmer atmosphere. So after about a week of patrolling around the Western Isles, picking up dead bodies, tabulating the crashed aircraft, looking for observation posts, and sort of calling in on settlements to tell them the war was over because they didn't know, I eventually ended up on board Fearless back in Stanley. Spent a most amazing 24 hours ashore visiting all my friends, drinking much too much whiskey, much too much laughter, much too much food, much too much happiness, really. And to me, it was a very lovely sort of end to the war, relaxing my friends in Stanley. And I think I visited 40 houses in that 24 hours, every single one of whom was keen to press upon me more whiskey and more cakes and more tea. But at the end of it all, I had to find some way home, because I didn't belong to anybody, of course. I didn't belong to any unit. I'd gone down there as a sort of extra numerary, and I was on nobody's books. And of course, at the end of the war, people had forgotten that I existed. So I managed eventually to bum a lift back in Canberra, thanks to Julian Thompson, who suddenly heard that I didn't actually have an official billet to go home in, as I'd come out rather unofficially. But he managed to fix a space for me on board Canberra, and I had 3 glorious weeks unwinding in Canberra on the way home. But I was lucky, I had no men to command. Almost everybody else was either a member of the staff and therefore had reports to write and God knows what, or men to command. I suddenly didn't have any men. I commanded the landing craft, task force landing craft squadron during the war, which had been formed and then disbanded. But I suddenly was just by myself again. So I really could relax at the end. I wrote my report, but it was only about 2 paragraphs long, because it sounds stupid. But we had learnt no lessons. All the work we'd done was work we'd practiced in North Norway. And unlike some people, we really were working under the same conditions, weather conditions, the sort of field systems, the loads that we carried, the operating conditions, were all very similar to that which we'd conducted in North Norway. So I got home, whenever it was, middle of June or July, I can't remember now.
Did the taking of the islands turn out to be harder or easier than you had anticipated as you approached them?
I think in a funny sort of way, probably easier. I, of course, was under no illusions about the weather and the conditions underfoot and the lack of water and food, and I was aware that we had to take that all with us. I think we expected the Argentinians to fight. So in that respect, it was easier. The only people in the Argentinians who did fight, of course, were the Air Force and one or two small, well, yes, okay, the guys up in the mountains. But by that stage, they were fighting almost in self-defense rather than... And certainly the ground forces never brought the war to us, to their enemy. And that was much in our favour. The enemy air force, of course, was superb and quite magnificent. And I think if they'd chosen different targets and if they'd got their bombs fused correctly, that would have made all the difference. But they hadn't, thank goodness. But certainly my view, and I think everybody else's view, was that once we'd landed and established ourselves ashore, although there were going to be privations and setbacks, we were going to win. Once they had allowed us to land, and they missed their chance, and the Air Force did miss the chance, no matter how brave they were, by going for the wrong ships in those initial hours. An amphibious landing is easily buggered during that transition from ship to shore. Easily. And they missed that chance. And they could have done it, even with their reasonably meagre resources. But they missed it. So once we were ashore, we were going to win, although I think we expected to have to fight more land battles, and certainly to defend ourselves, whereas all our battles were attacking battles. But my business was the nautical side of it, so I'm not really the best qualified to comment. But and of course there was no naval battle as such. There were no ship versus ship battles, apart from conqueror sinking Belgrano, which, as far as I was concerned, probably was the best thing that happened in the whole war. I wouldn't say that as an Argentinian, obviously. One always regrets loss of life, no matter how no matter what circumstances it occurs. But forget the loss of life, the sinking of the ship was... And if that was Admiral Woodward's decision, good-o, and he deserves all the praise for that. And certainly Paul Reiford Brown, his son's called Paul, Captain Reiford Brown, anyway, who lives just here and who I know quite well, did extremely well. And that was the best thing. I think if that
happened... From what point of view?
Well, it meant the Navy wasn't going to come out and play. Mind you, if it hadn't been Belgrano, it might have been another ship and it'd have gone back. Very sort of precious, the Argentina Navy. Very precious organization. From what little I knew of them, but I certainly, the Argentinian Air Force did everything I expected them to do, and more. They were superb. But they missed their chance, it has to be said. And if they'd got it right on D-Day, I doubt if the islands would still would be British. I really do doubt that. We would have had no second chance to run another landing, I don't think. I think Maggie would have said, okay, we've tried. And we'd have had to have gone back to the United Nations, or just stood off for months and gone back to the United Nations, and who knows what would have happened. I don't think there would have been a second attempt at an amphibious landing. I don't know. Ask somebody more closely involved.